Your main job in life is to get the greatest amount of happiness and satisfaction from everything you do. Your main job at achieving personal success and financial independence is to get the very most out of yourself in every way possible so that you can accomplish your goals in 5 or 10 years rather than in 30 or 40 years. Throughout this program, you have learned ideas, insights, methods, and techniques that you can use to get better results immediately in a wide variety of areas. In this session, we're going to talk about the process of acceleration, or stepping on the gas pedal of your own talents and abilities so that you move ahead more rapidly. I have recently become computer literate. I have a dozen people using computers in my company, and all of our accounting systems have been computerized for some years. I finally realized that computer literacy is an absolute requirement for success in virtually any competitive field for the indefinite future. You and I have no choice but to get up to speed on computers and then stay ahead of the curve in terms of what they can do and how they can help us for the rest of our working lives. In learning how to use my computer, I learned an interesting concept that applies to the subject of this session. It's called a power command. Anyone who knows computers knows that every computer has a series of things that you do, going from A to Z to get a particular output. However, each computer program has built into it these power commands, which enable you to boost or accelerate the speed at which you get from one point to the other. Your ability to manage yourself and others gives you accelerators that enable you to increase the quality and quantity of your output by using power commands, which are the managerial tools, techniques, and skills that enable you to become a multiplication sign in your business and personal life. In an earlier session, I talked about the forms of leverage that anyone can develop to help them to be more effective as they're getting their careers onto the fast track. In discussing real estate and other investments, I also referred to the concept of leverage, which enables you to take advantage of the resources of others to achieve your goals. This concept of leverage, of making yourself a multiplication sign, of using your talents and abilities to accelerate yourself ahead of others, is really the key concept of achieving success of any kind. The main type of leverage that you've heard about is called OPM, other people's money. All banking, all finance, all real estate, and other investment is based on the use of OPM. Your ability to get the use of other people's money makes all the difference between your accomplishing a little and accomplishing a lot. However, people are very careful about parting with their money. Commercial bankers are in the business of making good loans, not risky loans. Your friends and associates who have worked hard for their money are extremely cautious about losing it for any reason. This is why your credit rating, your reliability with regards to money, is something that you need to build up and guard with care throughout your adult life. The critical factor in getting the use of other people's money is called ROI, or return on investment. Every single use of money for investment or development is taken with an eye to ROI. How much money will be put in and how much will come back as a result? The only reason you or anyone should borrow money at a specific rate of interest is because you feel that you can earn an even higher rate of interest on the use of that money. In this sense, money is like a tool, and the rate of interest is a rental rate for the use of the tool. If you can rent money at 10% per annum, and you can invest it and make it grow at 20% or 30% per annum in your own business, then you make a profit of 10% to 20% on the use of the money, the difference between what you pay and what you can earn. However, when you're younger, it's very difficult to get a loan to start or build a business, or to take advantage of an entrepreneurial opportunity. Fortunately, there are other ROI formulas that you can use to increase your value and make it much more likely that you'll get the money you need to increase your leverage. For example, there is return on inspiration. This is the extra energy, enthusiasm, and attentiveness that you put into your work when you're excited and inspired about the value and importance of what you're doing. This kind of attitude and behavior rapidly brings you to the attention of people who can help you. There is return on imagination. One good idea is all you need to start a fortune. Asking questions about what you're doing and about how it could be improved will often trigger your imagination into coming up with new ideas for producing products or services cheaper, better, faster, or so on. Many great successes in America began with a person who was continually applying their imagination to their work to find ways to do it at lower cost or with greater profitability. What ways could you use your imagination more constructively in the work that you're doing right now? There's also return on intelligence. As I said earlier, intelligence is a way of acting. Whenever you act in a way that is consistent with achieving your goals and aims and consistent with achieving the purposes and objectives of your company, you are behaving intelligently. The more you learn about how to be more effective at what you do, the more intelligently you behave and the greater you'll be rewarded. What are some of the forms of additional intelligence or knowledge that you could develop that would enable you to contribute more to your current job or to your current customers? There's also return on initiative. This means having the boldness. One of the leading economists in the early part of the last century in England was a man named David Ricardo. Ricardo's law, called the Law of Comparative Advantage, is one of the most important concepts for you to know if you're going to go to the top of your field. Ignorance of this law causes more unhappiness, more frustration, and more failure than you could possibly imagine. The Law of Comparative Advantage is a mathematical formula that explains the importance and reasoning of using leverage in everything you do. It simply says that you will always be more productive doing the few things that you do the best and which contribute the greatest amount of value to your life and your work. At the same time, you must delegate, eliminate, outsource, and de-emphasize those things that you do, even if you can do them well, that do not make as much of a contribution to your work and your life as the other activities do. Ricardo's law is, in a way, the basis of modern management. It is the key to understanding leverage. Like all laws, it's consistent with the law of cause and effect, of sowing and reaping. It says that if you wish to earn $50,000 per year in your field, you have to do $50,000 or more worth of work. You cannot be paid the money you want for very long if you don't earn it. There are many people out on the streets looking for jobs today who thought that no one was looking and it didn't really matter if they weren't working hard. Well, someone was watching and it did matter. The reason people are laid off is because they are no longer making a contribution that is in excess of their cost to the organization, for whatever reason. For example, there are roughly 250 working days in an average year. If you wanted to earn $50,000 per year, you would divide $50,000 by 250 days to get $200 per day. You would then divide the $200 per day by the 8 hours that you work to reach a figure of $25 per hour as your desired hourly rate. This is your target. If you want to earn $50,000 per year, you must earn $25 per hour. You must do $25 per hour work, 8 hours per day, 250 days per year. You cannot phone your friends, make your own photocopies, get your car washed, enjoy long, leisurely coffee and lunch breaks, socialize with your friends at work, and end up being paid $50,000 per year. Here's a simple way to keep yourself on track every hour of every day. Continually ask yourself, would I pay somebody else $25 per hour to do what I'm doing right now? Would you reach into your pocket and take out $25 and give it to someone else to drive around, listen to the radio, to read the newspaper over a cup of coffee, or to chat with the other people at the office? If you wouldn't pay $25 per hour out of your own pocket for that activity, stop doing it immediately. Discipline yourself to do only those things that pay you as much or more as you wish to earn. If you want to earn $75,000 per year, you must earn $37.50 per hour, 8 hours per day, 250 days per year. Many of the major problems that people have regarding job security and low income is because they don't understand this simple point. If you don't earn it, you can't be paid it. If you want to earn $100,000 per year, you must earn $50 per hour. And if you start a little earlier and you stay a little later, and at the same time you work a little harder and work a little smarter, you can put yourself on the side of the angels. You can give yourself the winning edge. By doing the kind of work that pays the kind of money you want to earn, as sure as God grows little green apples, you will soon be earning the kind of money that you want. When you're starting off in your career, you earn very little. The value of your contribution is low, and so your annual or monthly wage is low. You're usually on your own, and because money is tight, you get into the habit of doing virtually everything for yourself. When I was in my 20s, I did much of my own cooking and most of my own laundry. I did most of the work on my car, and I was completely responsible for my own housekeeping. If something was torn, or if I lost a button, I would get out a needle and thread and repair it myself. I would change my own oil and replace my own transmissions. I would change my own tires when they were flat or worn, and I would wash my own car. When I got my first house, I went out and bought a lawnmower and a bunch of garden tools, and then spent every Saturday or Sunday mowing my lawn and cleaning up my yard. When the winter came, I shoveled my own snow. I trimmed my own sidewalks, pruned my own trees, and inside I moved my own furniture and carried my own boxes. Like you, like most people, I did this for many years. When I got married and we got a house and then another house, I felt very responsible. Even though I was working harder and harder at my job and earning more money, I still felt that I had a duty to get all these things done. One Saturday afternoon, after I had spent all of 3 hours in the hot sun mowing my yard and cleaning up the garden, I was sitting in the shade resting when my wife, Barbara, came up to me and sat down. She said that we needed to hire someone to mow the lawn and take care of the yard. "Wait a minute," I said. "What's wrong with the way I'm doing it right now?" She said something I'll never forget and which is relevant to you as well. She said, "Brian, you can no longer afford to mow your own lawn. Your time is simply too valuable to be spent working in the yard. It would be better if you just sat and rested or spent time with the children than working at something that we could get done for a few dollars an hour." This was a hard thing for me to accept at first, but I immediately recognized that she was right. I was locked in an old paradigm, in an old rut, an old way of doing things. The only way that I could move ahead was if I let go of some of the old things I was doing so that I could have more time and energy for new possibilities. Managing yourself enables you to get far more output per units of input. It enables you to maximize your talents, abilities, and resources to give you the highest return on energy, physical, emotional, and mental, that is possible for you. Self-management is a key skill that is practiced by all high-achieving men and women. The natural extension of self-management is the management of others. Management has been defined as getting results through others. You always have a choice. You can do the job yourself, or you can get someone else to do the job. If you do the job yourself, you have the power of one person working. If you get the job done through someone or several others, you have the power of many working for you. Your success depends on you utilizing the power of many others and coordinating their activities so that the results you get are greatly in excess of what you could get working by yourself. Perhaps the greatest breakthrough in the increase of production was the systematic division of labor into specialized tasks. That's what you have to do. Since any result that you want requires completion of a large number of tasks, you have to think through what these tasks are and then decide which of them you absolutely, positively must do yourself and which of them can be done by others. Your job is not to do the whole task, but to coordinate the activities of other people so that the whole task gets done. This is the great art and science of management, and it is the ultimate in leveraging yourself for maximum achievement. When you start off at any job or in any new business, you have to learn from the ground up. You have to pay your dues. You have to do all the little jobs as well as the big jobs. When I was starting off, I typed my own letters, stapled my own papers, bought my own paper clips, stamped my own letters, and cleaned my own floor. As I mastered the basic tasks and became busier and more successful, I was able to hire other people, first part-time and then full-time, to do the things that I had already mastered and which were no longer good uses of my time. It's the same with everyone, and it will probably be the same with you and your work. Many people make the mistake of wanting to start at the top and work up. They consider themselves to be too good to roll up their sleeves and do the heavy lifting that's required at the beginning. They want to give orders to other people to do things that they don't understand how to do themselves. They don't realize that a tall building has a deep foundation. A great career is built on a solid foundation of complete mastery of the basic tasks before going on to other things. For example, if you want to purchase a Burger King franchise, which costs between $250,000 and $400,000, you must put in 400 hours without pay working at a local Burger King. You must clean floors, flip hamburgers, shake French fries, and pour Cokes. You must clean grills and empty trash. You must unload products and scrub refrigerators. You must do every part of the job involved in the operation of a successful Burger King for many, many hours before you can make the final decision to put up your money and acquire a franchise. The management at Burger King long ago learned that there is no substitute for the down and dirty experience of doing every job in the franchise that is necessary to prepare a manager to build and run a successful business. it's the same with you in much of what you do. The starting point of the art of management is simple. It is the establishment of an objective or a goal that cannot be reached by one person alone. It's the determination of a sales or marketing or accounting or administrative objective that requires more energy and efforts than that possessed by any one person. At this point, the science of management clicks in. It becomes necessary to get other people involved in the process. It is at this point that you begin to demonstrate one of the greatest arts of Western civilization, the process of modern management. No matter how complicated management responsibilities or tasks become, they always boil down to the asking and answering of the two questions I mentioned earlier. The first is, what are we trying to do? And the second is, how are we trying to do it? Whenever you're in doubt for any reason, stop the clock, drop the flag, sit down and ask yourself and others, what are we trying to do? And how are we trying to do it? Asking and answering these questions accurately is the starting point and the foundation of managerial effectiveness. Your job is to get serious about the art, science, and process of management, and to recognize and realize that it is not something that comes naturally. Management is something that must be learned, to be studied and practiced. There are hundreds of business schools and courses and thousands of books, articles, and magazines on management. Some of the best work on the subject of management that has been done in the last few years. From the time when you begin your career until the day you retire, you should be drinking in management material the way you breathe in oxygen. Learning about being more effective as a manager should be a regular part of your day, your week, your month, and your entire work life. You should take courses, read books, and listen to audio tapes. Sometimes, just one little idea or concept can be the strategic key to the situation you're facing. It can make all the difference. Having that bit of knowledge, information, or skill can enable you to achieve great success and save you years of hard work. Now, there are seven basic functions of management that apply to both self-management and the management of others. They are in order. First, planning. Second, organizing. Third, staffing. Fourth, delegation. Fifth, supervision. Sixth, measuring. And seventh, reporting. These are the big seven. And whether you manage one person or 1,000 people, you engage in these seven continually. The first function of management is planning. Planning is an essential management skill. Planning is the setting of goals and objectives. It's determining where you want to go and how you're going to get there. Planning entails the ability to articulate the goals clearly, to write them down and make them measurable. Clarity is essential. Many of the problems that companies and managers have today arise from the fact that they have little or no planning. Their goals are fuzzy or unclear. Perhaps 80 to 90% of companies today are completely immersed in operating rather than managing. They are walking forward with their eyes on the ground in front of them rather than on the horizon ahead of them. They are so caught up in day-to-day activities that they seldom take the time to ask, what exactly are we trying to accomplish? What are our real long-term goals? The critical activity of planning is the definition of the ideal end state. What results are you trying to achieve? What outcomes do you desire? If you achieve your goals exactly as you want, what would they look like? How would you be able to tell that you had achieved your objectives successfully? When General Norman Schwarzkopf took command of Desert Shield and then Desert Storm in the Persian Gulf in 1990 and 1991, he and his staff spent fully 6 months planning the offensive that would drive the Iraqi army out of Kuwait. Even though they had some of the finest military officers and technological resources ever assembled, they still spent 6 solid months planning for every contingency. It's often been said that the devil is in the details. It is the planning that roots out the flaws that can be extremely costly later. As a result of meticulous planning on the part of General Schwarzkopf and others, when the offensive began, the Allied forces were able to knock out 41 of 42 divisions of the fourth largest army in the world in less than 100 hours with almost no casualties to the U.S. and Allied forces. Good planning really pays off well in execution. The second function of management is organizing. Once you've decided what it is you want to accomplish, if you're really serious about accomplishing it, you sit down and make a list of all of the resources that you require to achieve your goal. If you want to build a business or achieve a certain level of sales, or produce a product or reorganize a department, the first thing you think about is what you are going to need in order to do the job in an excellent fashion. There's a saying in warfare that amateurs talk strategy while professionals talk logistics. This means that having great goals and objectives is a wonderful thing, but they're only a prelude to the real work. The real work is sitting down and thinking through and then acquiring the people, skills, money, and material resources you need to do the job well. You can imagine that the function of organizing is very much like the building of a bridge. You want to get from one side to the other. To do that, you need to assemble all of the materials for the construction of the bridge. There's no point beginning construction with insufficient materials or without all the materials necessary to build the bridge so that it can handle traffic indefinitely. What kind of talents and skills will you need to achieve your goals and objectives? How much will it cost? Where will the money come from? How long will it take? And what are the various things that can go wrong? Your ability to plan a multitask job, a job that will require completion of several smaller jobs, is one of the most important skills that you can ever develop for high achievement in America. In fact, if you're not capable of managing a project, you must always work under someone else who is. And managing a project is very much like achieving a goal. You make a list of activities and you organize the activities in terms of priorities. You then organize the activities in terms of time and sequence. And then you start working on your plan. The third function of management is staffing. This is where you carefully select the members of your team. This is the process of interviewing and selecting the men and women with the skills that you need to achieve the goals and objectives for which you are responsible. This is one of the most important skills of management. It's been said that 95% of success in business is in the selection process. To paraphrase Shakespeare, if you select in haste, you will repent at leisure. Hire people carefully. Hire them slowly. Check their references thoroughly, and always trust your gut feeling when it comes to selecting people to work with or to work for you. Almost all problems in business are people problems, which often go right back to mistakes that were made in selection in the first place. The fourth function of management is delegation. This is the key skill to multiplying yourself and your abilities. It is perhaps the most important technique of management. All personal effectiveness in managerial roles depends on your ability to pick the right people and put them in the right places and then assure that they get the job done on schedule. It is delegation that enables you to really leverage yourself and get an enormous amount of work done through the organization, deployment, and allocation of human resources. When delegating, think through the job or task to be done. If you're going to hire someone on the outside to perform a service for you, think it through carefully and be very selective. If you're going to hire an employee or assign a responsibility to someone who works for you, remember that delegation is not abdication. You are still accountable. The success or failure of this delegatee is your success or failure as well. Don't rush. Take your time. Be patient. Give it all the time it needs to think it through. When delegating, don't look for or expect perfection. If another person can do the job 70% as well as you, it's probably all right, unless the performance of the job is critical to many other things. In delegating, the only real predictor of future performance is past performance. It's not what the person thinks they can do, but what they have done in the past. This is not to say that a person can't learn and grow with new responsibilities, but you must carefully think through how the individual has performed with previous responsibilities before delegating anything important. When you delegate a task, give authority commensurate with responsibility. Give the person the time and resources necessary to do the job properly. Set deadlines on every task that you delegate. If it's a large task to be done over an extended period of time, set sub-deadlines as well. In delegating, remember all the variations of Murphy's Law. Whatever can go wrong will go wrong at the worst possible time and will cost the greatest amount of money. Whenever I delegate a task, I have the other person write it down in front of me and then read it back. At least 50% of cases, the most sincere and intelligent person gets it wrong. They hear something you didn't say, and they don't hear something you did say. So take the time to make sure that the other person knows exactly what is to be done, how it will be measured, and when it is to be completed by. If you have any doubt about understanding write it in a brief memo, and send it to the person in written form. Often, that simple act will save you many hours of frustration and enormous sums of money. The fifth function of management is supervision. The very best form of supervision follows accurate and clear delegation. It's when you check on a regular basis with the other person to make sure that they're on track with the job. Whenever possible, set up a regular schedule of meetings to review progress. Watch for unexpected problems and delays. Be sensitive to the fact that the job may be over the other person's head. Be prepared to step in to help or get other resources so that the person can stay on schedule. For example, the controller for my corporation is a very fine and capable woman. However, as our company grew, her responsibilities and activities increased dramatically. Soon, she was coming in early and staying later every day. It was obvious that it was wearing her down, but she felt so responsible for getting the accounting done on time that she just kept working harder and harder. Finally, I stepped in and insisted that she get additional help. Just as in my earlier lawn mowing example, she was reluctant, but she finally went along. We soon hired a full-time bookkeeper who was able to do much of the basic accounting so that my controller could dedicate herself to the few financial statements that were most important. Soon, she began to relax and get back to her old self. The basic rule of supervision is to inspect what you expect. This doesn't mean that you continually look over people's shoulders. It simply means that you check regularly to see how things are going. Studies show that employees consider a task to be important to the degree that the boss asks about it on a regular basis. Your job is always to know the status of the critical tasks for which you're responsible. This requires that you ask and receive accurate answers and deadlines. An important part of management is this. It is absolutely essential that you resist the temptation that people have toward reverse or upward delegation. This is when they delegate the task back to you. They often claim to be too busy or to be unskilled or unsure. They ask if you would handle this task for them. Would you phone such and such a person or get them such and such a piece of information? Perhaps you could write a letter or proposal. In many cases, they come to you with a problem and they ask you if you could think through the problem and come up with a solution for them. Then, away they go, free at last. You now have the job. It's back on your lap. Many managers find themselves working long into the evening on tasks they had originally assigned to other people, but which somehow got reverse delegated back to them. This sort of thing happens in your private life as well. People are always trying to get you to do work which they should be doing. The key question which you always have to ask is, who is getting paid to do this job? Whoever it is, that's the person who's responsible for the work. Refuse to take it back. The sixth function of management is measuring. In measuring the performance of another person, you need objective criteria. You need standards of performance. You need standards of quality or output. You need to agree in advance what you want done and how you will know it was done to an acceptable level. It's not enough to tell a person to go out and make sales. You must tell the person that you want and expect a certain level of sales within a certain time period. Numbers don't lie. Get agreement on how success will be measured in advance and use the numbers objectively to assess how well the person has done the job. The better use you make of numbers, the less likely that you will be forced to get involved in personalities when problems arise. Instead of saying, you can simply refer to the agreed-upon measurement criteria and focus the discussion on the job rather than on the person. The seventh function of management is reporting. Whoever you are, you have to report to someone. When you work for a company, you have to report to your superior on a regular basis. Even if you have an extensive staff and you are a senior manager, there is always someone above you to whom you have to report results. Your ability to report in a timely, accurate fashion is a real measure to others of how competent and capable you are. The people above you don't like being left in the dark, but there's one thing that they like less, and that is surprises. The reason people don't like surprises is that surprises are very seldom positive. If you anticipate a problem of any kind, report it in advance so that there is no shock when it does happen. At a company that I was consulting with recently, the budget projection showed that there was one division of the company that was making $10 million of annual sales and generating $4 million in annual profit. The total profits of the whole company for the year were $8 million. However, As they installed a new computer system, it became clear to the executive in charge that the entire way of calculating sales was messed up. It turned out that they weren't making $10 million worth of sales at all. They were only making $5 million in sales, and they had been double counting the sales for the last year. They weren't making $4 million in profits, they were losing more than $1 million every 12-month period. When the president of the company finally got the bad news, the senior executive in charge was fired and the department was cleared out and completely reorganized. If the news had been relayed to him as soon as the first signs of problems occurred, it might have led to a completely different outcome. By the way, even if you own your own company, you still have to report to your bankers, your shareholders, your staff, your customers, and everyone else whose approval or disapproval affects the health of your business. Reporting is a discipline. The very exercise of preparing accurate analysis and reports of your business helps you to understand it better and perform more effectively. The very best business people I have met are extremely knowledgeable and precise about the results of their business activities. They measure them continually. Management is leadership in action. Your ability to manage human and material resources to get things done through others, to multiply your talents and abilities with other people's money, other people's efforts, and other people's knowledge is the true demonstration of leadership in our competitive marketplace. The better at it you become, the more you will accomplish in a short period of time. There's an old saying that goes, "There are no bad soldiers under a good officer." This is a big subject, but sufficient it is to say that the people around you are very much a reflection of your own talents and abilities. Large, sophisticated companies have competent, talented executives and staff. Young, inexperienced entrepreneurial ventures have inexperienced and often incompetent people. The manager or leader sets the standard. No one in the organization will be better than he or she is. Your job as a manager is to get continually better so that the people you attract to you will be better as well. Your ability to budget, make projections, plan, organize, and make your numbers is the measure of your competence as a manager. The basic formula for management is talent times relationships equals productivity, or T times R equals P. Your talents, your skills, your abilities, and your experience multiplied times the number of people that you can affect or control equals the quantity and quality of what you produce. It determines your rewards and your position in life. It determines how high you fly and how far you go. In the Bible it says, "O good and faithful servant, you have been faithful over small things, I will make you master over large things." If you do small jobs well, you'll soon be given bigger and bigger jobs to manage. In everything you do, your job is to become an excellent manager, to become a multiplication sign, to leverage yourself and use your talents to accelerate the speed at which you get the results for which you are responsible. Your skill as a manager will determine your level of success and achievement as much as any other skill you could learn in your career. There is virtually nothing that you cannot do if you are willing to first learn what you need to know and second, keep at it long enough and hard enough until you finally win through. Throughout this course, you've been learning the critical skills for high success and achievement in America. You have learned hundreds of practical, usable ideas that you can put to work in your life right where you are, right now. You're probably feeling just a little bit overwhelmed and wondering where you start and how you keep going. In this final session, I'm going to give you a track to run on. Every idea in this session has been discussed in a variety of ways in earlier sessions. You may refer back to this session whenever you feel a little frustrated or when progress seems to be going too slowly. These ideas will enable you to refocus your efforts and get back onto the high road, moving in the direction of your goals. The title of this session is How to Succeed by Really Trying, but I could just as easily have called it the 10 Commandments for Achieving Maximum Performance. The first commandment is for you to set clear, specific, written goals for every area of your life. In business, this is called a business plan. Your business plan for your financial or your personal life must include everything that you want to accomplish and all of the various steps that you're going to have to take to attain each of your major goals or objectives. You need to develop a clear goal and an action plan for the achievement of financial independence, including how much you want and what you're going to do to achieve it and when you're going to reach your financial goals. You need clear goals for your family and for your relationships. It is your duty to decide what kind of a life you want to live with the people who are most important to you. What do you want to do for and with them, and in what time period? How do you want them to think about you and talk about you, and what do you need to do on a daily and weekly basis to ensure that you achieve and maintain the quality of relationships that you desire? You need goals for your health, including how much you want to weigh and how fit you intend to be. You need a plan for the way you eat and an exercise program to keep you at the maximum level of fitness. You need to plan and program rest and recreation into your life to assure that you're always physically capable of maximum performance in every area of your life. You need business and career goals as well. You need to identify the steps that you must take and the goals you must achieve in order to rise to the top in your field. You need personal and professional development goals. You need a plan for continuously upgrading your skills and abilities and making yourself more competent and more valuable. One of the very best uses of your time is to become better at the most important tasks that you perform. Finally, you need spiritual goals, goals for inner development. You know that peace of mind is the highest human good, and your primary responsibility to yourself is to assure that you achieve and maintain your own peace of mind most of the time. One way to set and achieve goals is for you to plan strategically. Work back from your goal to the present moment. Break your larger goals down into sub-goals. Break your 3 to 5 year goals down into 6 month, 3 month, and 1 month goals. Keep your thoughts clearly on where you want to be in the future, and then organize and adjust your daily activities so that every step you take is moving you in that direction. Review your goals and plans continually. No plan is ever perfect the first time it's put onto paper. It will contain numerous defects. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you're ready to revise, modify, and adapt your plans as you get newer and better information. Remain flexible. It's the most essential quality for success in a rapidly changing dynamic economy. To clarify your thoughts, always think on paper. Crystallize your goals and plans by writing them and rewriting them over and over again. All high achievers are continual planners. They work with a pad and a pen, and they are making lists, analyzing the results, and revising their plans all the time. One of the keys to strategic thinking is for you to carefully consider the consequences of each decision and each action in advance. What is likely to happen if you decide to do one thing or another? What will be the primary consequences, and most important, what will be the secondary consequences? How are other people likely to react if you choose a particular course of action? Success means never relying on luck or hoping that things will turn out consistent with your expectations unless you do something about it. Remember, action without thinking is the cause of every failure. When you precede every decision and every action by careful thought, when you practice the quality of thoughtfulness on a regular basis, you will be much more likely to move ahead steadily towards your goals. The second commandment for lifelong success is to develop a success mentality and an unshakable, positive mental attitude. Because of everything you've learned about why and how your thoughts become your realities, you owe it to yourself to keep your thoughts consistently positive. Begin by seeing yourself as the president and chief executive officer of your own personal services corporation. Think about yourself as a senior executive and walk and talk and treat other people as though you were a very important person, because the truth of it is that you are. You are the most important person in your world. And with the tools that you have gained in this program, you're on your way to becoming an exceptional human being. Even if you work for another company, act as if you own the place. Treat the company as though it belongs to you. Put your whole heart into your work and be the kind of person that others look to as an example of the ideal employee. Think of yourself as a role model for others, your co-workers, and members of your family. Think and speak positively and constructively about other people and situations all the time. Self-mastery and self-control begin with your thoughts and with your words. So, watch what you say. Whatever you express is impressed back into your own subconscious mind and will arise again to have a positive or negative effect on your life and your relationships. Keep your vision before you. Think about your goals and ideals, your values and your hopes for yourself as you go through the day. All improvement in your life begins with an improvement in your mental pictures. There's a one-to-one relationship between how clearly you see your goals in your mind and how rapidly they materialize in your reality. If you practice visualizing your goals repeatedly, eventually they become sharper and more vivid and begin to take on tangible form. Maintain an attitude of complete faith and confidence that you will achieve what you are meant to achieve when you are ready to achieve it. The law of sowing and reaping works 100% of the time. When you have sown enough, you will reap the abundant harvest. The third commandment is to be result-oriented and action-oriented. Intense result orientation is the key to peak performance and the achievement of a high quality and a quantity of results. High-performing men and women are simply those who have the ability to get more and better results than average and mediocre performers. Work on your key result areas all the time. Continually ask yourself, why am I on the payroll? Why are you on the payroll? What specific measurable results have you been hired to accomplish? Of all the results that you could be getting with your time and talents, what results can have the greatest positive impact on your company and your career? What is the strategic key to your job or your business? In every job, every problem, and every situation, there is a key that unlocks the future. In a problem, there's a key that leads to the solution. In a career, there is a key skill or performance area that leads to rapid advancement. In a business, there's a key element that determines the success and profitability of the enterprise. As you become a more thoughtful and more skilled thinker, you will develop this success quality, this ability to look through the situation to the key, to the critical element that determines success and failure. In your company and in your job, ask, what can I and only I do that if done well will make an important contribution? There's always one thing that you can do which, if you do it in a superior fashion, will have more of an impact on your job success than almost any other single activity. The smartest men and women are invariably those who have the ability to ask the right questions. When you continually ask yourself these difficult questions, the answers will enable you to focus on the one or two things that you should be doing which are more important to you and to your company than anything else. The fourth commandment for great success is simply concentrate your powers with single-minded intensity of purpose. This commandment alone will enable you to increase, if not eventually double, your productivity. All high-performing men and women have developed the ability, through years of hard work and self-discipline, to concentrate single-mindedly on one thing, the most important thing, and to stay with it until it's finished. Probably the single most important reason for failure and underachievement is the inability to concentrate, the inability to develop and maintain a high level of intensity toward the achievement of your goals. To help you concentrate your powers, always work from a list, a plan, a written blueprint for your activities. Every weekend, sit down and plan out your most important activities for the coming week. Every evening, review your progress of the day and make a written plan for the day ahead. When you write out clearly what you intend to do, you're much more likely to stick to it than if you attempt to make it up as you go along. Use the 80-20 rule on everything. Set your priorities based on the maximum positive impact that an activity can have on your future. This will invariably be the highest value use of your time. You have tremendous strengths, talents, and abilities, and you can only use them when you develop the habit of concentrating your powers on the most valuable use of your time every hour of every day. The fifth commandment for getting onto the high road in your career is to commit to excellence in your chosen field. As you learned earlier in this course, there's no one who's enjoying great financial and personal success who has not reached the point where he or she is recognized as being among the leaders in that field. Excellence is always a journey, never a destination. It's a trip that you set out on when you make the decision that you're going all the way to the top. And you never stop traveling forward, becoming better and better, until you retire and leave the field. Begin your journey toward excellence by defining and determining the success factors in your work or business. There are basically 5 or 6 reasons, sometimes fewer, but seldom more than 5 or 6 reasons for success in any area of endeavor. If you're in sales, the success factors in your field could be prospecting, getting appointments, presenting, answering objections, closing, and following up to assure satisfaction and referrals. If you're running a business, your success factors could be the quality of your products or services, the effectiveness of your advertising, the strength of your sales efforts, the accuracy of your financial controls and systems, your ability to attract the right people, and the 6th could be your ability to arrange for the money that you need. In every case, in every field, success or failure rests upon one or more. The 6th commandment for maximum performance is, respect your money and it will respect you. A positive and constructive attitude toward money and toward the idea of financial accumulation is essential if you're going to make the kind of money that you desire. Since it's your actions that count, you can often tell by the way you handle money how you feel about it. People who are successful with money usually keep their money folded neatly and organized sequentially in their pocket, wallet, or purse. They keep their checkbooks current and balanced with each deposit and withdrawal noted. At any given time, they can give you a pretty accurate statement of their financial resources. On the other hand, people who don't respect money tend to have it jumbled up in their pockets or their purse. Their checkbooks are a mess, and the only thing they know for sure about their financial status is that it is worrisome and confused. Now, which of these two pictures best describes you? Start respecting your money by working from a written budget in your work, your business, and in your personal life. Set a series of clear, written financial goals and then make plans to accomplish them through systematic financial accumulation. Once you've set a budget, discipline yourself to stick to it. If you allocate yourself a certain amount for rent, transportation, clothing, food, dining out, and so on, make a note of each expenditure and then use your willpower to stay within your own constraints. In a way, a financial budget is a planning tool for long-term monetary success. When you write it down, it becomes a promise to yourself. How well you keep this promise is a measure of your own integrity and will affect your self-esteem, your reputation with yourself. People who are disciplined and orderly with regard to their finances tend to be disciplined and orderly with regard to other things as well. In any case, you very seldom find a person who has achieved financial independence who is sloppy and casual with regard to money. Begin today to save 10% of your net income as you earn it. Pay yourself first. Put the money away and allow it to grow through compound interest. Take full advantage of an IRA or a KEO plan that allows you to accumulate money on a tax-free basis. Your savings will translate into both freedom and opportunity. When you have enough money in the bank to cover 2 or 3 months of expenses, you then have the freedom to decide where you will work and what you will do. You don't have to put up with a situation that you don't enjoy or which doesn't make you happy. Money in the bank also represents opportunity. Very often, when your mind is magnetized with the desire for financial independence, you will attract investment and business opportunities into your life that you can only take advantage of because you have your savings put away. The opposite of financial freedom is being a financial slave, being enslaved to your bills and to your financial responsibilities. When you don't have money in the bank, you tend to be preoccupied with money most of the time. And this is not a good way to live. And finally, with regard to respecting your money, the first part of financial success is to earn the money, and the second part is to hold on to it. A wealthy multimillionaire was once asked his rules for financial accumulation. He replied, "I have just 2 rules. The first rule is don't lose money. The second rule is whenever you're tempted, refer back to rule number 1. The 7th commandment for high achievement is become wealthy by developing a wealthy mindset. While it's true that you can achieve financial independence by saving 10% of your income throughout your working life and allowing it to compound, you can become wealthy far faster by developing a wealth oriented attitude. Your attitude is your approach to matters and situations that involve money. It's the way you view your world in terms of wealth creation. A good rule to remember is that wealth is income from other sources. You're not wealthy because you make a lot of money. You're wealthy when you have money that comes in whether you work or not. Your first job in financial accumulation is to invest your money in assets that appreciate and which yield positive cash flow. Assets that appreciate, like homes, land, and commercial buildings, are very different from assets that depreciate, such as cars, boats, and motorhomes. Both wealth and profit come from adding value, from finding ways to increase the value of a product or service by doing something to it. If you assemble raw materials and manufacture a product that you can sell for substantially more than the cost of the raw materials and the labor, you have added value. If you get the right to sell a product or service, and you go out and show a customer how the product or service can benefit him or her, you are adding value. Before you do anything involving your hard-earned money, study and learn every detail of the business or the investment. Take nothing on faith. Be extremely cautious. Remember the old saying, when a man with money meets a man with experience, the man with the experience is going to end up with the money, and the man with the money is going to end up with the experience. The eighth commandment for great success is, develop a philosophy of time management. Time is the one indispensable and irretrievable resource of achievement and financial accumulation. Your attitude or your approach toward time, how you think about time as a fundamental part of your life, is going to tell a lot about how well you do. Here are four ideas that will help you in developing a philosophy of time management. First, take the long view. Develop long-time perspective in your life. Think about what you are doing and evaluate your decisions and actions based on their likely impact on your life 5 and 10 years from now. Second, take the short view. Live your life minute by minute. Remember that in the final analysis, the only time that you will ever have is now. A great day, a great week, a great year, and a great lifetime is nothing more or less than a series of excellent moments. Third, treat your time like money. Spend it carefully. It's really all that you have to sell. This means that you can't spend your time socializing on the telephone, dropping off your dry cleaning, picking up your groceries, or drinking coffee, or chatting with your friends. You must work all the time you work. And fourth, with regard to a philosophy of time management, you must develop a sense of urgency. Do it now, do it now, do it now is the best motto for you to learn and internalize. Develop the habit of moving fast on opportunities and responsibilities. Get on with it. Don't delay. Success is a numbers game. The more things that you try in a given period of time, the more likely you are to succeed. The faster you work, the more energy you have, and the harder you work, the luckier you get. So, develop a sense of urgency. Develop a reputation for speed and dependability. Become known as the person who, when somebody wants something done fast, they give it to you. This habit alone will open more doors for you than you can presently imagine. The ninth commandment for success and high achievement is to guard the quality of your relationships with others as the key to your long-term success and happiness. Remember, more than 85% of all the happiness that you will ever enjoy will come from your relationships with other people. If success can be measured in terms of peace of mind and loving relationships, then there's probably nothing that is more important in the long term and in the short term than for you to safeguard your relationships and to place the health of your relationships above all other considerations. Treat everyone, starting at home, like a million-dollar customer. Treat the members of your family as though they were worth a fortune to you, because when you think about it, they certainly are. You would probably trade everything in the world for the health and well-being of the people who are closest to you, and yet you often think little of treating them with rudeness or indifference when you're tired or irritable. Emmett Fox once said, "If you must be rude to strangers, but save your company manners for your family." Guard your integrity as a sacred thing. Your integrity and your character form the foundation for all your relationships. The way that you get along with other people on the outside is a reflection of the way that you're getting along with yourself on the inside. When you work to develop the high qualities of character and integrity, you'll find that your relationships go along much more smoothly. More people will want to do business with you and will want to provide you with resources based on these qualities than on any other single basis. Practice the golden rule with everyone, especially with those who don't practice it themselves. Never let anyone else's poor behavior or lack of ethics be an excuse for compromising your standards. If people are rude, treat them with charity. If people are unethical, treat them with care, but never allow yourself to descend to their level. Practice the golden rule and always do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Activate the law of reciprocity by always looking for opportunities to do things for others. Become known as a go-giver as well as a go-getter. Every time that you do a favor or kindness for someone else, you develop within that person a propensity to want to return the kindness or favor to you. This is one of the most powerful of all subconscious influences, the desire to free oneself from obligation when one has received a favor. You can trigger this law of reciprocity in others whenever you go along always looking for opportunities to put in more than you take out. And finally, in guarding the quality of your relationships, always be courteous and considerate with others, even with others who are rude and inconsiderate. Remember, everyone you meet is carrying a heavy load. They all have problems that are weighing down on their hearts and souls, and they're often unaware of the effect of their behavior on others. The 10th commandment or rule for great success is that courage is the foremost of the virtues because your very success depends upon it. Courage is the quality that underlies and supports all of the other qualities. Dare to go forward. The future belongs to the risk takers, not the security seekers. The future belongs to those rare few men and women who dare to move out of their comfort zones into the areas of uncertainty and challenge. One of the best pieces of advice I ever heard was, "Act boldly and unseen forces will come to your aid." Whenever you make the decision to act boldly, to dare to go forward into the unknown, it seems that all kinds of natural forces rise up to help and support you. Overcome the fear of failure that holds most people back by confronting your fears. Do the thing you fear, and the death of fear is certain. Make it a lifelong habit to identify your fears and then turn toward them, confronting them squarely and moving into them rather than moving away. Master your fears, especially your worries, by always asking, "What's the worst possible thing that can happen to me if I go ahead?" Whenever you analyze a worrisome situation by asking, "What's the worst possible thing that can happen?" your worry seems to dissipate almost immediately. Once you've identified the worst possible thing that can happen, go to work with all of your energy and intelligence to make sure that it doesn't happen. The only real antidote to fear and worry is positive, constructive action toward a predetermined goal. Once you've identified the worst possible outcome, ask yourself, "What would be the ideal solution to this difficulty?" Then, go to work on bringing that solution into reality. It's been well said that if you aim for the moon, you may not hit it, but you will at least hit the stars. Remember with regard to fear that everyone is afraid of something. The brave person is not the person who has no fear. The brave person is simply the person who acts in spite of his or her fear. It's normal and natural to be uneasy about change or about something new and different. But that's not a sufficient excuse for staying in the same place or for resisting the change when it comes along. The most important part of acting bravely in the face of uncertainty is that courageous actions develop the habit of courage. If you back away from the things that you fear, you develop the habit of cowardice, of continually backing away. Whichever habit you develop, you will tend to act that way more and more often as time passes. So for your own sake and for the sake of your entire future, you owe it to yourself to develop the habit of unshakable courage, to dare to go forward. And when you act boldly, unseen forces will come to your aid. Now, to end this session, here are 7 principles for positive, constructive, and accurate thinking. These principles are based on universal laws, and they explain success and failure as well as any other principles you'll ever learn. The first principle is that you get not what you want in life, but what you deserve or what you earn. Desiring something is not enough. The law of cause and effect says that you first must put in the cause if you desire to enjoy the effect. The law of sowing and reaping says that you first must plant the crop if you wish to harvest the crop. You will always get what you deserve, and you are getting exactly what you deserve right now. The wonderful thing about this is that because you can increase the quality and quantity of your efforts, your sowing, you can build yourself up to the point where you deserve far more. Then you'll reap a different crop, again, exactly as you deserve, with your new talents and abilities. The second success principle is that your rewards will always be equal to the value of your service to others. Our economy is a service economy. We're rewarded by others, by our boss, and by our customers in direct proportion to the value that they place on our services to them. If you wish to increase the quantity of your rewards, you only need to increase the quality and quantity of your service. The house you live in and the car you drive are simply a measure of how valuable your fellow men and women, as customers, consider your services to be. This doesn't mean that you're not a valuable person. It simply means that people are only willing to pay for certain things in certain amounts, and the amount that they're willing to pay you today represents their fair estimate of the value of what you're now doing for them. The third success principle is that you will always be paid in direct proportion to what you do, how well you do it, and the difficulty of replacing you. If you're not happy with the amount that you're earning, you can always do one of three things. You can do something different. You can get better at what you're doing already. Or you can do what you're doing somewhere else where it's possible for you to be paid more for it. In every case, the difficulty of replacing you is going to have a major impact on how much you receive. That's why they say that it's never crowded at the top. People who are known for high-quality work and companies that are known for high-quality products and services are always the highest paid and the most profitable in their fields. The fourth success principle is that you are being paid today exactly what you're worth, no more and no less. What you are worth today is the sum total result of all of your education and experience, combined with how you're applying it to get results for others. Because of the law of cause and effect, you can never take more out of the universe than you put into it. You can never be paid more than you're worth in the long run. Your job is to increase the value of what you do so that you are worth more. By becoming worth more, you will attract into your life the people and situations that will give you the opportunity to be paid at your new level of worth. The fifth principle of success is that, as Vince Lombardi said, the quality of your life will be determined by the depth of your commitment to excellence, no matter what your chosen field. The quality of your life, your self-esteem and your self-respect, the esteem and regard in which you're held by others, and the quality and the quantity of the rewards that you receive from your work will all be determined by how well you do what you do. Your commitment to excellence, to be the best, will move you upward and onward faster than any other decision that you could ever make. The sixth principle of success is that your situation today is exactly what you need right now for your own growth and development. The situation that you find yourself in with all of your problems and difficulties has been sent to you at this moment to teach you something that you need to learn. Difficulties come not to obstruct, but to instruct. Your job is to look into your situation and determine what it is that you're meant to learn as a result of where you find yourself today. Every situation can be a positive situation if viewed as an opportunity for growth and self-mastery. Wherever you are and whatever you're doing, it is exactly what you need at this moment to continue your upward growth and evolution. And the seventh principle is that your success will be determined by what you do after you've done what you're required to do. If you only do what's expected of you, you can never be paid any more than you're earning now. But if you put in more than you take out, if you go the extra mile, if you make a habit of always exceeding the expectations of your boss and your customers, you will put yourself on the side of the angels. In Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay, Compensation, he says, "Do you serve an ungrateful master? Then serve him the more. All things will be equalized. All efforts will be rewarded. You will always get out in equal measure what you put in, and the longer you wait for your rewards, the greater your rewards will be. Emerson goes on to say that interest upon interest is the method of payment of this exchequer. The longer you put in extra efforts without being rewarded, the greater will be the quality and the quantity of your rewards when they finally come. In everything that we've been discussing in this session, we're repeating and reiterating the law of correspondence. Your outer world of results, of health and wealth and happiness, will always be a reflection of your inner world of thoughts and emotions and preparation. Success is an 80-20 proposition. 80% or more of your success will be determined by the quality of your thinking. This is why I have encouraged you to develop the habit of thoughtfulness, the habit of thinking carefully about who you are and where you're going, and especially of keeping your thoughts and your words positive and constructive. Talk about and think about what you want in life, and keep your thoughts and your words off of what you don't want. Talk about, think about, and work toward your major goals all the time. In the final analysis, the key to positive, constructive living is goals, and all else is commentary. If you keep your goals, your vision of your ideal future before you, then every day you will continue to grow more surely toward the stars. We're now at the end of the final session in Action Strategies for Personal Achievement. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your commitment to yourself and for your tenacity in working through this huge program, session by session, all the way to the end. It's been an enormous undertaking for you, and I hope it's opened your eyes to the incredible number of possibilities that lay before you. It's been said that the purpose of a liberal education in our society is to teach you how to learn for the rest of your life. This program is really an all-inclusive encyclopedia of success and achievement. Your listening to the program is a preparation to teach you how to learn as well. Once you've listened to these ideas, you'll have an idea of where they are and how to put your hands on them quickly when you're dealing with a specific situation. The entire program is meant to be listened to over and over. Each time that you review one of these sessions, you will hear things that you missed the first time. You'll get ideas and insights that went over your head in the past. The reason for this, of course, is that as you take in more information, you grow as a person. When you take in the ideas again, you are different from the person you were before. You're more open and alert and aware. You're more sensitive and intelligent. You have a wider and deeper perspective, and you can see possibilities that you may have missed in the previous listening. More than anything else, I want this program to save you thousands of dollars and many years of hard work in learning these ideas by trial and error. The smartest thing that you could ever do is to learn the things you need to know from the experiences of others rather than paying for them yourself. We've been partners in this learning experience. I've gone down the road of life ahead of you and then come back with some of the things that I have found. The smartest person of all is the one who takes ideas from others and applies them to his or her own life rather than going through it all personally. I wish you the very best of continued success and achievement in all of your applications of the material contained in this course. The very fact that you have purchased and listened to this program means that you are an outstanding person. Whatever you have accomplished in life up to now is only a hint of what is possible for you in the future. I wish you the very best of success, happiness, and achievement in everything you do. There are no limits to what you can accomplish if you are clear about what it is, if you set it as a goal, make a plan, and then persist until you succeed. And I'm sure you will. Good luck and Godspeed to you.